Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation.
This is Valley Edition, FM 89's weekly look at the issues that matter to the residents of the San Joaquin Valley.
Hello, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and welcome to Valley Edition. On our program today, there are two propositions on the ballot that will raise your taxes. Both say the money will go to schools. Will it? We'll hear from both sides. And a Fresno couple's generous gift to encourage middle school students to aim for college. Plus, the Central Valley Asthma Trail, a walk to bring attention to a chronic disease. But first, dueling propositions. Both will raise taxes. One, most of the money dedicated to schools. The other also says schools will benefit. Proposition 30 is Governor Jerry Brown's initiative. It temporarily raises sales taxes and increases income taxes on those making more than $250,000 a year. Supporters say it will prevent devastating cuts to schools and colleges, provide funding for public safety, and help pay down California's debt. The other proposition, Proposition 38, is a state income tax increase to support public education. Supporters call it the Our Children, Our Future, Local Schools, and Early Education Investment Act. The increased taxes will generate about $10 billion a year, most of that $10 billion earmarked for K-12 schools and early childhood development programs. Political activist Molly Munger is pushing the ballot measure and also funding it. She sat down with Amy Quinton with Capital Public Radio for this interview.
So what does Proposition 38 do?
Proposition 38 puts over $10 billion per year into our public schools by gathering the money into a lockbox and sending it directly to every public school so that we can really be sure that it gets to every school and every kid in California. We need to restore the cuts that the schools have had, just brutal cuts. And Prop 38 is going to bring back all the things that we've lost. We're now 47th in the country in per pupil spending. It's a hall of shame that we really shouldn't be living in as Californians. And Prop 38 is the answer to that. Let's all work together and get the money back into the schools for our kids.
Given that Proposition 38 does raise the income tax on almost everyone, how do you justify that in a state with 10% unemployment, where even the middle class has seen health care costs rise and wages decline? Should this be put off until the economy gets better?
It's always more pleasant to postpone paying for the things that we need for our children, but most of us feel that the children should come first. Whatever else is going on, we really need to take care of them. They are our future. Their education is what will drive the prosperity of our family, that it will drive the prosperity of our state. And to be doing anything else with the money at the expense of the kids' education is just not right. In addition, Prop 38 is based on a very progressive tax. That is to say, people making less than $50,000, between $25,000 and $50,000, it's $54 a year. And most Californians make less than $50,000. So for most of our people, it's a very minor amount of money. And then, of course, it does go up. Rich people are going to pay 2.2% more, but even there, 2.2% is okay, we think, to ask very rich people to pay. So because it's a sliding scale and the poor pay very little and the rich pay a lot, we think it's a very fair way to go.
And there are certain restrictions about how that money raised can be spent, correct?
Yes, a few.
Tell me about that.
There's no flexibility about where the money goes. Where the money goes is by formula to every public school in California, charter, county office, California School for the Blind. Anybody who is operating a publicly funded K-12 school gets this money according to a per pupil formula. Very transparent, very enforceable, felony provisions for not getting the money to every single school according to the formula. So how it gets delivered to the schools is very tight and restricted. But what is done with the money once it gets there is not a matter of Sacramento control. It's not spelled out in the initiative. Instead, we leave the spending of this money, the use of this money, to the local communities that are closest to the kids and closest to the schools. The school districts get this money, or the charter operators. They get into a dialogue with their school communities, and they decide how they want to spend this money at each school site. So there's very little restriction on how it's used. There's a very tight control that it gets there to enrich the educational program at every school.
And I should point out that this money goes to K through 12 schools as well as early childhood education?
Yes, indeed. And let me just add some accountability provisions that we have, because with freedom must come responsibility. And so the local communities that are going to get this money and have control of it, over it, do have to do a few things to make sure all of us are able to scrutinize what's happening with the money. They're simple things. You have to tell your local community why you decided to spend the money at each school that way. You have to say what you're trying to achieve with the money. And then every year, you've got to report whether you hit that benchmark or not. And all of those accountability reports are available online for the scrutiny of every taxpayer and every researcher and every community member in California. So we can watch the money, but we're not creating a big bureaucracy over it.
The governor has a competing proposition, Prop 30, that would also raise tax money and prevent $6 billion in cuts to schools. Why should voters support your tax measure over his?
Well, the governor's tax measure doesn't actually contain new money for schools. Oh, a tiny amount. I think it doesn't even deserve the description of Band-Aid, because it's just so small that it isn't even that. What the governor's initiative does is it backs a bunch of money, over $2 billion a year, out of the schools, and then it uses the tax increase to pay them back, and that's why they don't net gain anything, and that is why the California School Boards Association has issued this statement saying that they want the public to understand that the governor's initiative does not provide new funding for schools. Well, we at 38 just don't think that's good enough. I mean, the schools have lost $1,400 since 2008 per kid, $1,400 per child. It's 20 to 25% of the funding that the schools used to have. And to say to them, you know what we're going to do for you under 30 is we're just not going to cut you anymore. Don't expect to have anything restored, but we're just not going to cut you anymore. That's just not good enough, we don't think.
We're talking to Molly Munger, the proponent of Proposition 38 on the November ballot here on Capital Public Radio. Two new polls out this week show your measure either tied at 45% or slightly behind. What's your reaction to those numbers, first of all, and what do you think will need to happen to get your measure passed?
Proposition 38 has always polled right about in the mid-40s based on its ballot label alone. That is to say, just if what the voter reads on the ballot. But what the voter doesn't know looking at the ballot is that this money is going to get delivered without any Sacramento ability to interfere with it. It's not going to be part of the budget process. Sacramento can't touch it, and it is going to arrive at every school in California on a per-pupil basis, transparent, enforceable, real money to restore the cuts. They don't know that. They just know that it's a tax to support the schools. And when you think about it that way, isn't it interesting that 45% of our voters are there even before they know how secure the money is? Once we communicate that the money is secure, then you see the numbers go very, very high indeed. And so we've always known that it was going to take a communications effort to get the word out about how Prop 38 works, but we're prepared to do that, and we expect that the numbers will move quite smartly as soon as that begins to happen.
In terms of campaign strategy, though, are you preparing TV ads? Where are you going from here?
Well, you know, I don't think it's any mystery. We communicate with the voters in all the traditional ways, Amy.
So given your passion about the education of children, would you tell voters to vote for both tax measures, yours and the governor's?
Oh, we certainly hope that they will vote for Proposition 38. It's certainly the one that really helps the schools. There are some voters that worry that Prop 38 won't pass and they don't want the government to have no new money. And so they say, well, I'm going to vote for both, with Proposition 30 being my insurance policy just in case 38 doesn't pass. I think as we go forward and the polls begin to show the robustness of 38, fewer and fewer people will be afraid and therefore will need to hang on to that insurance policy. But for now, you know, we're understanding those people who want to vote yes, yes. And we're saying that Prop 38 will win with a coalition that consists of yes, yes voters and people who say, you know what, I know that 38 can't win unless it gets more votes than 30. So I'm not going to vote for 30. I'm just going to vote for 38.
If your measure passes but Proposition 30 fails, the education trigger cuts could go into effect. Those trigger cuts include the elimination of up to 3 weeks of classes. So how concerned are you about that?
Well, I have to say I am not concerned about it, because the trigger cuts are put there for largely political reasons. They're put there to scare people. And if Prop 38 passes, there's really no need to do that. That is to say, Prop 38 provides plenty of money. There won't be any need to have those draconian cuts.
There will be a lag time, though, before the money that's raised from Prop 38 would actually get into the state coffers, correct?
Well, there is a little lag, but it's a matter of a few months, and it's not likely to be a crippling to any effort that we have. The schools have largely taken the cuts from 2012-13 already, so, you know, it really isn't likely to affect that year much. And by 2013-14, you know, we'll just have a lot of new money for schools, and we can begin climbing out of this deep hole that we're in, 47th in the country. Prop 30, you know, is just going to leave us there, struggling in the basement of our entire country, with our kids getting fewer resources invested in them than children almost anywhere else in the United States. And that is just that's a terrible thing for us all in California to be looking at. And this year we have a chance not to do that, not to continue that, and to really strike a blow for what we all know we need to do, which is investing in our children and in our future.
A lot of people have been talking about, is it going to be Prop 30? Is it going to be Prop 38? Has there been too much animosity between the campaigns, or more specifically between you and the governor?
I'm not aware of animosity, no.
Molly Munger, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Amy.
And that was Amy Quinn with Molly Munger, Amy Quinn with Capital Public Radio, for this interview. And I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition Radio. We will continue our discussion on Proposition 30 and Propositions at 38 with Michael Turnipseed, Kern County Taxpayers Association, and Michael Roth with the Yes on 30 campaign. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us.
Good morning.
Thank you for having me.
Mr. Turnipseed, the Kern County Taxpayers Association, of course, opposes both of these, 30 and 38, I assume because they raise taxes.
Well, that's the first reason. But the second reason is, again, when you talk about accountability, what happens when money goes to Sacramento, and even though this new money that Mrs. Munger talked about would go to support education, there's nothing that prohibits the legislature from taking it out on the bottom side. While the new money would pour in the top of the education silo, the legislature could make further cuts to education and transfer that money to address other budgetary needs. There are really no protections for that. And there's really no actual improvement or accountability in this to make California schools better. It's just putting more money into education without any safeguards. And the fact that we have 24% of our students don't graduate from high school, the fact that 85% or more of all dollars going to education goes to salaries. There's no protection that there just doesn't go for salary increases and hiring more people without actually putting more supplies, more instructional aids, those type of things in the classroom that
are
really
needed. Proposition 38 does have certain specific guidelines built into the proposition in a way to assure that this money goes for certain programs, it goes to schools, and so it does have some accountability measures built in. Does that at all resolve that situation?
We've seen many accountability measures in the past in many other propositions. And what happens when the money goes to Sacramento First, and what happens is, what is the legislature actually going to do with existing funds? Is this just going to be a switch where the Munger money will go in the top side of the silo to fund education, and the legislature takes money out the bottom side and redirects it to other legislative pet projects?
Mr. Roth, do you see that as being a problem when it comes to trying to get ballot propositions passed just because of the way the legislature has functioned in the past?
Well, you know, the government is not perfect, as we all know, but I just want to take a step back here and talk about Prop 30. And, you know, in the last 4 years alone, our schools have been hit with $20 billion in cuts. More than 30,000 educators have been laid off, and our class sizes are among the largest in the country. We can't continue cutting our schools and keep the economy strong for the next generation. You know, Prop 30 directs new money for schools into a dedicated account that the legislature cannot touch. It is subject to independent audits every year to ensure that the money is being spent for schools and public safety. And the audit will be open to the public so that voters and parents know that funds are being spent properly.
Well, you know, I'm just having to play the devil's advocate here, that supporters of the other ballot measure, Proposition 38, say that basically the money generated from Proposition 30 doesn't go for new funding. It just replaces the money that was going to be cut.
Well, here's the fact. I mean, the fact is that Prop 30 is the only measure on the ballot that will stop and prevent $6 billion in cuts from happening this year. It's the only measure on the ballot that will invest in our schools this year and colleges so that we can prepare the next generation for the jobs of the future.
And Mr. Roth, are you concerned at all that people are just in a way sort of budget weary? I mean, you look at all the ballot initiatives we have. We have both these two, 30 and 38, both saying they will support schools. And that every year, you know, voters watch the state go through this song and dance with the budget and the threats to cut public safety and education, and again, seeing those cuts. And that, are you concerned that people will just tune out this message, even though it is a very important message?
I think voters understand that our schools and colleges are at the brink. You know, Prop 30... it asks the California's wealthiest to pay a little bit more so that the middle class doesn't have to bear the burden. Families making under $500,000 a year will pay no additional income taxes. So we think there's a very concrete understanding from voters that our schools, our economy, and our future is important, and they're willing to pay a little bit more to invest in our future.
Either way, Mr. Turnipseed and Mr. Roth, I'd like for you both to kind of address this. Either way, education has suffered huge budget cuts. Students going to college see their tuitions raised several times a year, and it's having a huge impact not just on our schools but on our economy. What do we do with that situation? Because oftentimes when it comes to balancing the budget, a lot of the money will come out of education some way or another.
Who's
going first, Mr. Turnipseed?
Oh, okay. You hit it right on the head. The legislator and the governor in Sacramento are using education to tug at the voters' hearts. We support education. The problem is when the state has limited resources, it must prioritize. And the state has intentionally cut education because it is important to people. It is important to our future. And really, the legislature and state need to understand that education is the highest priority of the state. It is the economic engine that made California great. And if we don't invest in our schools, but they're taking money away for schools for other pet projects that don't benefit the economy.
Well, Mr. Turnipseed, where do you think the money should come from?
Well, first of all, we go through economic cycles up and down. And we have to understand that back during the dot-com bubble in the late 1990s, we had a tremendous bubble. Tremendous programs were started that are ongoing programs that weren't one-time programs. And those programs are still in effect and have not been reduced to the magnitude of education.
Okay, Mr. Roth, again... talking about how do we solve this problem, this continual problem, it seems, every year when it comes to finding a true source of funding for education without every year budget cuts hanging over their head.
Well, I think the economy, it plays an important role in this. And I think business leaders and business groups around the state understand that we can't keep cutting our schools and still keep the economy strong for the next generation. The Valley Industry Commerce Association has endorsed this measure. The Bay Area Council has endorsed this measure. The State Chamber and the Business Roundtable have gone neutral on this, on Prop 30. They understand that we need a workforce, an educated workforce, to build a strong California for the future.
Well, what guarantees does the public have that Proposition 30 money will go for education?
Proposition 30 will dedicate 100% of the money to schools and colleges. The money will be going to a dedicated account that the legislature cannot touch. It will not be used for to fund any administrative costs or anything other than for schools and colleges. There will be strict oversight and public disclosure and audit requirements to ensure that money will be spent only on our schools.
But also, I think Proposition 30 says that some of this money, the tax money, will be going for public safety and will be going to help pay down California's debt.
Well, the Prop 30 is the only plan on the ballot that gives funding and control for public safety back to the counties. It's the only plan that establishes a guarantee for funding for public safety at the local level. And this is part of the governor's realignment, and it'll lock in that funding for local public safety.
If we can, since we're discussing Proposition 30, Mr. Roth, just go through and give us the highlights of that proposition and what it is saying it will do.
Sure. Proposition 30 is the measure that will prevent $6 billion in cuts to our schools this year. It will temporarily raise taxes on families making over $500,000 a year. It'll raise a quarter cent sales tax temporary for 4 years. That's 25 cents on a $100 pair of shoes. And most importantly, it'll lock in funding at the local level for public safety, and it'll invest in our schools, in our future. And it takes us, it's not the end all, it's not the panacea, but it definitely gets us on the path to budget stability.
And Mr. Turnipseed, your main opposition with this is the fact that we're looking at tax increases, albeit over, it's couples who make over 500, but it's individuals who make over $250,000. And it is a temporary tax, I understand, in effect for about 7 years. Is this enough time for California then to get its house in order so that we won't see these continual budget cuts?
The state of California has decided in the current year's budget, they have already budgeted this revenue into their budget. If it doesn't pass, this is kind of the extortion of the process, that there are going to be more cuts. there's money that's going from the state to local government for realignment, which is a whole other issue, which is this local control, but for public safety, that's a whole other discussion. But really, when the budget's adopted with this big hole in it, it's not there unless the voters approve a tax increase. It's very disingenuous. Their job is to adopt a balanced budget, and they failed to do that. And now they're trying to pressure voters into saying there's going to be more cuts in schools if you don't pass it. It's like putting a gun to people's head. And I just think that it's time that we get our fiscal house in order in Sacramento and have balanced budgets with our priorities that people really want. And education is, I think, on all fronts, the voters' top priority. But it seems like the more money you give it, more money gets siphoned off into other projects.
That has been a problem in the past, Mr. Roth. And are you concerned that the public, like I mentioned earlier, the public may be concerned about this because they hear every year about cuts to education. They not only hear about it, they experience it. You know, families have been hit with huge expenses for their children trying to go to college. So are you concerned, like I said, when it comes to the voting population, what's going to happen to either one of these two measures?
Yeah, I mean, I think voters understand that the California Dream was, you know, built on our public schools and colleges. And, you know, you can say what you will about the funding for education, but the facts are the facts. And our schools have been hit with $20 billion in cuts and 30,000 teachers and educators laid off, and we're at the brink. And we're asking those who have been most fortunate to pay a little bit more to invest in our collective future. And I think voters, as polls have shown over the past few months, the Proposition 30 is holding strong and steady in the face of criticism. And so we are confident and we will have the resources necessary to effectively communicate to voters that we can't keep cutting our schools and still keep the economy strong for our future.
What is your concern about having both of these propositions on the ballot? Propositions 38 and Propositions 30, both saying they will support education.
We're squarely focused on passing Prop 30 because it's very apparent that it is the only measure on the ballot that will prevent $6 billion in cuts to our schools this year, and it's the only measure on the ballot that will invest back into schools this coming year. It'll lock in public safety funding at the local level, and so we're squarely focused on passing Prop 30.
But, you know, there have been studies that have shown, and many of the experts are concerned, and they've said that when you have two propositions like this on the ballot, that a lot of times they kind of cross each other out and people end up neither ends up passing. And if neither of these end up passing, education is really going to suffer.
That is correct. I mean, this is really about our schools, it's about our kids, and it's about our future. And we believe that voters understand that Proposition 30 is the best course in the initiative that will help fund our future.
And Mr. Turnipseed, again with you, I know that you oppose these. You oppose most measures when it comes to tax increases. But I've still not heard how do you propose that we fund education? How do we restore all of these cuts that have been made to education? Because indeed they have suffered budget cuts year after year after year.
The legislature made the decision on what programs get cut and to what level and what priorities are. And instead of eliminating other programs, they've decided to make education put out there front and center to kind of push the voters to vote for this. One thing I want to make perfectly clear, and back in May, the California School Boards Association said, the governor's initiative, Prop 30, does not provide new funding for schools. Let's get that perfectly clear. There is no new funding. This is just to fill the hole in the current budget. for more additional cuts down the road, because it, the budget we have is structurally not balanced.
Now, Mr. Roth, I will give you the opportunity to respond to that, but that has been stated, and that's part of the criticism, that it is not new money, it's just restoring budget cuts.
Well, look, they're very complex formulas when you deal with Proposition 98 guarantees, and the revenue raised by Prop 30 will help meet the Prop 98 guarantee for schools and raise additional money to be used only for schools. The measure increases the guarantee by $2.9 billion and will help pay for that guarantee and provide a base amount for funding schools for each school district. The fact is, the bottom line is, 100% of the money goes to schools and community colleges. Look, Prop 30 is supported by a broad coalition of teachers and classified employees and law enforcement officials and business leaders, because they understand the importance of funding our schools and growing our economy.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you both for joining us this morning for this important discussion. And people really need to get out there and educate themselves about both of these initiatives. Michael Roth with the Yes on 30 campaign and Michael Turnipseed with the Kern County Taxpayers Association. Thank you both for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having us.
I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you are listening to Valley Edition.
Support for Valley Edition comes from Kaiser Permanente Fresno and Cahuilla Delta Medical Center.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition. Students at Tehipite Middle School in Southeast Fresno are getting a huge gift and a huge opportunity. Fresno couple Murray and Francine Farber announced a $1 million scholarship endowment, which will provide a $1,000 scholarship for 2 years for Tehipite students who graduate high school and complete the requirements to attend college. Mr. Murray and Francine Farber are both here, as well as having the Tehipite principal, Yvonne Zeisling, join us this morning to talk about this. Thank you all for being here.
You're welcome. We're happy to be here.
First of all, I'd like to ask both you, Mr. Farber, what went into your decision to choose Tehipite Middle School as the school for your endowment?
The kids at Tehipite did impress us when we met them. We know it's an impoverished neighborhood, and we want to give them a fair chance at life. And when we met the parents and children, we were quite impressed. The parents were very thankful. They blessed us. And also, we were impressed by the principal and the teachers. A couple of the teachers told us they actually cried when they heard about what happened. And I personally have been very impressed by the principal, Yvonne Zeisling. I was impressed by what she's done at the school. And so we're hopeful that we can do something to help these children.
Francine?
Also, Tehipite is in the Lowell-Jefferson area, which is the focus of a lot of improvement efforts throughout the city. For example, the mayor has hoped to revitalize that particular area, which is in disrepair, really. And also, the organization Reading and Beyond, of which I happen to be a board member, has a grant to focus on that particular area also. And so we thought, well, we should really pile it all on and see if together we can all make a real difference in the lives of these students.
And Mr. Farber, some of the things that you mentioned, I think, would be very important if you look at the success of students and children. They've got to have, they've got to be at a school with the right principal. They have to have the right attitude, and the parents must be involved to kind of make this all happen.
These are children who have wonderful ambitions, and meeting with them, the children talked about wanting to be a veterinarian, a police officer, a marine, a nurse.
An artist.
A professional basketball player.
Right.
These kids deserve a break, too, and this is what we're hoping to do. But I think one of the big things we want to do in addition to helping the individual children at Tehipity is hope this serves as a model for others in Fresno to think about corporations or individuals who could do something. This could be a model that could be picked up and helping children at other schools.
And, you know, we just had a prior discussion again about the California budget, and we've all witnessed what's happened to education in this state. And so what you're saying, there is a way for the community, the public corporations to kind of come in and help balance this out.
That's what we really hope will happen. For example, you know, there are two budget propositions that people just heard about, and they offer different things to the school district. Excuse me. But, you know, if Prop 30 were to pass, for example, there'd be another $17 million for the schools, which could go to Tehipity as well as all the other schools in Fresno.
So I hope there could be major gifts given to the schools, but there are organizations that can jump in and help in different ways. When we were at Tehipity, we met members of Rotary who are helping the arts, buying instruments for children. For those who can't give big time, hey, there are other things you can do. Schools need help, yeah. And there's room for lots of individuals to help in various ways, big or small.
You know, Juanita, there are four criteria.
Students have to earn this, right?
It's not a free ride at all. First of all, they have to have 95% attendance, and we want to hold them to that because if you're not in school, you really can't learn. Secondly, the coursework that they take has to meet the California A through G requirements, which are kind of mysterious to some people, but really they're 13 different courses that you have to take in order in social studies, science and math and so forth, in order to meet the requirements for a UC school. So we want these children to be college ready. Thirdly, they have to maintain a B average, a 3.0 average. And fourthly, annually, they have to do community service. So I see that as an opportunity for the community to jump in. For example, the grounds are really well taken care of there, but they don't have any flowering shrubs or flowers, as a matter of fact.
That's a great community project.
So if some of the local nurseries want to contribute to that, that would be great. The kids could do the planting and taking care of all of that. So that would be a nice thing to do.
Now let's bring in the principal, Yvonne Zeisling. What do you think? How can this impact the students at Tehipity, you think?
Well, this incredible gift is just giving so much hope to our Tehipity students and our families and our communities. Suddenly, grades and grade point average and good attendance has a tangible purpose that our students can really grasp. It's something that they can hold on to. And again, it's a scholarship opportunity that's within their reach, and it's doable. It's given our students and our teachers hope, purpose, direction, and our parents have embraced the opportunity with open arms.
And, you know, when you take a look at each of the criteria, you look at ways that it could so benefit not just the students, but the school and the community, because you're talking about, first of all, these students have to have good attendance. So hopefully your attendance rate goes up, as well as the graduation rates.
Yes.
Can I say?
Yes, that's certainly an impact, an immediate impact. And again, I echo what Francine said, the students have to be in their seats to learn. And in order to meet the rest of the criteria. So just having the students there is a huge positive. And the community service aspect is huge. We have some events ongoing throughout the school year, but there's certainly many more opportunities, and we look forward to partnering with the Cultural Arts Rotary Club in some of those community service activities.
Francine?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify something. After our son Steve passed away, just 11 years ago next week, actually, his wife very wisely kind of took a chunk of the estate and put it aside for something special. And she's been asking us to come up with a project that we thought we would like that would be beneficial for the community, and also something that Steve would like very much. So it's really through her generosity that this endowment has been made. It's funds from our son's estate that have flowed to Fresno, even though they never lived in Fresno, and she doesn't even live in California.
And
so she's been very generous.
This endowment was named and made in the honor of your son.
Right. It's called Steve's Scholars.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Since we moved to Fresno, we found a lot that we'd like about Fresno, even though Fresnans seem to put themselves down.
I find that a lot from people who move here. They have a whole different take on Fresno.
We have found Fresno very welcoming, at the same time that there certainly is some big houses here. There's this impoverished area, and that's the part that attracted us, that feeling that there's a need to help there.
And I just kind of want to go back to how this whole thing started. How did your son kind of inspire you to do this?
Well, he was a very generous person, as well as a fun-loving person. And he liked to do big things, and he loved to read. That was very important to him. And as he was able to, he began to give money to some educational purposes. He had a friend who was in charge of a special school in New York City, and when he heard it was a school specifically for immigrants and other people who had not had the opportunity to go to a regular high school, and he heard of some needs there, and he took care of them. He went to his old high school in Connecticut for a visit and found that one of the teachers needed a new computer, and he bought a whole system for her. So, I mean, he did like to do things related to education, so this seemed like a good thing to do.
And I know that both of you are strong supporters of Fresno schools.
Yes.
And what do you think now about the direction of the district, and how do you think what you're doing and other community involvements could really do to help? Because when you take a look at Fresno Unified, you have to look at the district as a whole, and that it's so huge, and the diversity and all the different challenges.
And it's like an elephant. Every time you think you know what's going on, you touch something else, and then something else pops up. But we're really very happy with this direction that Superintendent Hansen and the board are taking the school district. They were all wonderfully cooperative in helping us design all the details of this project, which took a lot of their time. But we also think that with the graduation task force and their recommendations and other things that have been accomplished, certainly the fiscal solidarity that the superintendent has brought to the district, we think these are very, very important things, and we're pleased. We know there's a long way to go. There's a lot to do, and the superintendent knows that as well, and he's running as fast as he can.
We like the fact that we've seen graduation rates increase, and there's still a way to go, and we hope we can help through our gift.
And I think also when you look at what you two are trying to do, it's a great example. Because we can all sit back and criticize, or we can all kind of step up and say, I want to be a part of this. I want to try to change things. I want to try to make things better. And that's where the community can become involved, and also working and supporting the improvements in the schools. And when you take a look at what's happening in the Lowell community, you're saying, okay, we have this one area that we're going to pour a lot of resources in, but there are so many other communities that really need the same thing.
Right, and there's no point in being negative. I think if you take a positive outlook and feel that something you do can indeed make a difference, then, it probably will. But this is a very long-term project, and we hope to have benchmarks along the way. Every year, the school people are going to let us know how things are going, and we're going to also do some special activities with the kids. So it's not just in 2018 that they're going to get the money. They're going to get other things along the way that we hope to institute, like trips to colleges, mentors coming in, special community activities like taking care of the grounds of the school and so forth. So
when we were at the school the other night, there are parents who came with their seventh graders and younger children, and we try to get across to them, this is not a one-time thing. This is an endowed gift so that there'll be money each year. And as we looked at some of the smaller children, we got across to their parents, when these children grow up and become seventh graders, they'll be part of the program too. They'll be Steve's scholars. It doesn't end with a one-shot. This is an ongoing thing.
And so this really starts for, I mean, it starts earlier because it can encourage students starting at a very early age to focus mm-hmm. on their education. Mm-hmm. But Steve's scholars is for the seventh graders.
Right.
At Tehipity, starting right there.
Starting there, but they have to stay in, follow the requirements, and graduate from a Fresno high school. And then they'll get the scholarship at the end of the rainbow.
And it's a two-year deal. They do well their first year, they get the money for a second year.
Right. So there's a lot of incentive there. And not only that, I think what is really good about this, too, is you look at where you started. You started in seventh grade, realizing that if they don't get what they need before they get to high school, it's going to be difficult.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes kids of that age only think of the immediate, you know, and 12th grade may seem a million years away, but I think this makes it a little more realistic for them. They know there's a certain finite time in which they really have to work hard, and these kids are used to working hard for everything they get.
And sorry about that. Principal Zeisling, I'd like to ask you this again. We almost totally forgot about you because we're enjoying this conversation. But how have your kids responded to this, and when does this start with them?
Well, this started immediately. We had an assembly. They were able to meet the Farbers and have the criteria outlined to them, and it's game on. We have started. Progress reports have come out for the first 4 weeks of work, and there's a huge focus on grade point average, attendance. The students, they know that it starts now, and it
so
is.
So it started with this year's seventh graders.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did, and they know that this is a program that's going to follow them and support them grade 7 through 12. And we've established a nice working relationship with Roosevelt High School and their principal. And those counselors are aware of Steve Scholars program and the cohort of students that will be progressing through Tehipity and then on to Roosevelt. And I might say that in my conversation and collaboration with the elementary schools that send their sixth graders to Tehipity, there's already enthusiasm brewing at their level because those students coming in next year will be a part of the Steve Scholars opportunity. So our students, the effect I'm seeing already on our campus is that students are more positive and they believe in this opportunity. They've met the Farbers. They really don't want to let the Farbers down. This has become very tangible to them. And the Farbers don't know this yet. I'm happy to share this, but we've already seen increased parent involvement in the parent education programs that we offer twice a week. Parents are coming with their questions and want to know how they can be involved. They want to know more about the A through G requirements and what it's going to take for their student to get into college and earn this scholarship.
And I think what you see here, too, is when you talk about this incentives, and it's not just an incentive. I think also what you're doing is telling these kids, you have somebody else who cares about you and kind of cares about your future. And, you know, that's a huge motivator for students.
I must add something. I truly, deeply appreciate Principal Yvonne's enthusiasm in visiting the campus more than once to see her talking to the children and the fact that she knows so many of the first names. And so I think she's really responsible, helpful, and deserves a lot of credit for building the enthusiasm.
You know, each of the seventh graders was given a T-shirt that we designed, and on the front it says Steve Scholars, and on the back it has the four requirements that they have to meet. So when they're walking behind somebody, they're going to read it every day.
They see it every day. Well, this is right. This is an absolutely wonderful program coming from two wonderful people who are putting, you know, what they say and what they believe to work. So Murray and Francine Farber, thank you so much. Thank you for the endowment, and thank you for being here this morning for the discussion, as well as Principal Zeisling. Thank you all.
Thank you.
I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition. You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you are listening to Valley Edition. Well, this Thursday, there will be a valley-wide effort to focus attention on a disease affecting 1 in 5 children in Fresno County. We are talking about asthma. Here to talk about this effort is Chris Castaneda with Kaiser Permanente in Fresno, and Maggie Tao. She is with SEIU. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Now, tell us what is behind this walk, and what because it's really interesting because it's going to be over several days, and you're going to different communities.
Correct. Well, healthcare workers and Central Valley residents like me are very concerned about the high asthma rates in this region. So where we are sitting right now, as you had said, Juanita, in Fresno is one of the worst asthma regions in the state. More than 1 in 6 residents of Fresno County suffers from asthma. So what we're doing about the problem is we're leading the Central Valley residents and community leaders on a walking tour from Fresno to Sacramento, starting from September 27th. To October 4th, to call attention to the high rates of asthma in the region and to call upon our leaders and legislators to address this problem.
So you're going to be going through communities from here northward up to Sacramento. Now, will you be stopping in each of those communities?
Yes, we will be stopping in each of those communities.
Yes. So what we're going to do, we're going to start off here in Fresno, and then we're going to head up to Chowchilla. We're also going up to Los Baños, to Turlock, Modesto, Stockton, and then we're going to end our walk in Sacramento. And on our way through the walk, we're actually going to be taking healthcare stories from the community, from our healthcare workers, and we're going to present those stories up to in Sacramento on our end of the walk.
So each community you go to, you will be meeting with people.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to have health booths and health care events later in the evenings. And throughout the whole event, we're going to be taking stories from people, from the community, as far as like how they were affected by asthma, what type of things they had to experience, if it was financially, physically, spiritually, like different stories that we can take back to Sacramento and try to fix. Because obviously there is a problem here throughout Central Valley, and it's time to actually step up and try to fix that problem. And so what our goal is to try to get stories and take these stories back and try to fix the problem if it's to do with the air quality. And whatever it is the concerns of the community, we're going to take these stories back and we're going to record them and we're going to make this it's going to be a big quilt as far as like we're going to be able to take these stories in and take these and present them as a video story quilt.
For those who are you hoping to meet with in Sacramento?
We have a task force in place right now. Our task force is a group of people, including our governor. We have our president Dave Reagan sitting on that right now, and we are gonna present that to them, and hopefully we'll be able to get an action there as far as.
So this tour is part of the Let's Get Healthy California, a visionary platform that the union has launched this year to fight chronic diseases and improve the quality of healthcare by, you know, lowering healthcare costs by working with community organizations and hospital owners. So as we go on this walk, there are about 50 core people walking with us through the 8 days, and we have around 400 people who will be joining this core team as they stop in these various areas along the journey. So we are extending the invitation out to everyone right now listening to join us as well.
Now, Maggie, you're with SEIU, and there are a lot of healthcare workers who are part of that organization, that union.
Correct. There are a lot of healthcare workers. We represent Kaiser workers, nursing home workers, home care workers, and as well as hospital workers throughout the state of California.
And, you know, you both talk about, and us here talking about raising awareness when it comes to asthma. And if you've lived in the Valley, we're very much aware of just how much this one disease impacts our region because of so many of our children. I think, what is it, 1 in 5?
Yes, 1 in 5. One of every five people in the state lives in the Central Valley, but more than 1 in 6 residents of Fresno County suffers from asthma. As we're looking at children, it's definitely nearly 1 in 5 children in the county. So you are correct.
So what do you want when you take this trek and you make this journey? When you get to Sacramento, when you talk about we've got to affect change, what do you need our legislators to do? What message are you hoping to bring to them? And are you hoping the personal stories have an impact?
We are collecting stories, and as you know as well, personal stories do make an impact on the legislators and those that are mostly affected by it. We are collecting personal stories. As I know, my own personal story is that my children suffer from asthma because I've lived in the Valley for over 20 years. And so it's very scary if one doesn't have any educational background on what asthma can do and how to prevent that. I know that my children has been in the hospital several times because they've had an asthma attack that we are not able to control. So these stories are very powerful, and asthma can even lead to death. So some of the stories that we are collecting is very personal and dear to the heart, and who knows it better than the people that are living in the Valley. And at these tour stops, you know, we'll also be providing free screenings for asthma and other chronic conditions, information on asthma prevention, referrals to free and low-cost clinics for treatment. And then at the end of the walk on a daily basis in the evenings, we'll be throwing community speakouts and fiestas with free healthy snacks for kids, game for kids, raffles, movie in the park. So it's a whole family environment that we are sharing this with.
And it'll definitely, I know your goal is to impact the legislature, but you're definitely going to be making an impact along the way as far as creating awareness with this.
Correct.
That's right.
When you do your journey from here up to Sacramento.
Yes.
And it's going to start Thursday.
It is going to start this Thursday, and I'm really excited, and it's history, you know, that we're doing here, and I'm really excited to be a part of something like this and to make a difference for our community and stand up for what's right. And it's just something that I'm really passionate about. You know, I've had the experience to actually experienced my cousin with an asthma attack, and it's not a fun thing, you know. It's not fun to experience, you know. Things like these, people need to be educated out there as far as what type of things can cause an asthma attack, you know, what triggers asthma attacks, you know. The education is not there, I feel, and I think that it's important that we're out there where Let's Get Healthy California is actually out there promoting healthy living and educating people, doing health fairs and getting the community involved in regards to chronic diseases and educating them, taking blood pressures, asthma screenings and things like that. And it's a good thing that what we're doing, and I'm really excited.
Well, this is one way really to draw attention to this. Chris Castaneda with Kaiser Permanente, Maggie Tao with SEIU. Both, thank you so much for joining us this morning to talk about this important issue.
I'd like to, for more information and to join us on the walk, I'd like to share with you our website, which is www.gethealthycalifornia.org, or call 888-501-8119, or email healthyca@SEIU-UHW.org. Juanita, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for that information, for getting it out there. And that is all for today's Valley Edition. You can hear audio archives and subscribe to our podcast online at kbpr.org. We welcome your comments and suggestions. And you can email us at talk@kbpr.org. For audio engineer Marv Allen, production and operations manager Don Weaver, and executive producer Joe Moore, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation.